Hello, everyone, and welcome to Qualitative Conversations, a podcast series hosted by the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group of the American Educational Research Association. I'm Jessica Lester, the chair of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group, and I'm happy to be joined today by Dr. Jasmine Ulmer. Dr. Ulmer will be speaking with me today about critical qualitative inquiry. She's an assistant professor in the College of Education at Wayne State University in Detroit. She teaches and directs the doctoral track in qualitative inquiry. Her current research develops place-based methodologies and pedagogies. In so doing, her work operates at the intersection of visual anthropology, gender and women's studies, and qualitative methodologies. An ongoing project, for example, connects images and writing with everyday life. This is situated within the broader goal of exploring the ecologies in which students live and learn. She frequently draws from critical and post-critical theories in her inquiries, which aim to foster a more inclusive and peaceful world. Prior to entering post-secondary education, she served as a National Board Certified Teacher, Instructional Coach, and Classroom Policy Fellow at the U.S. Department of Education. She recently received the Faculty Teaching Award from her college, as well as the Early Career Award from the Measurement and Research Division of the American Educational Research Association. She was a 2017 WSU Humanities Center Faculty Fellow as well. Thank you, Jasmine, for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Jasmine, you recently wrote a piece titled Critical Qualitative Inquiry is as Love. Just to start us off, can you share this with us?
Sure. What if we expressed critical qualitative inquiry is as love? We might move beyond normative approaches to introducing research that place queer theory, lat crit theory, critical race theory, feminist theory, disability studies, the global south, indigenous epistemologies, the more than human, and so very many more in the margins, in the periphery, outside the conventions of what becomes acceptable to know, think, feel, write, teach, and do in research. We might insist that an N of one is significant in the hopes that we will not continue to question how many more we will grieve before change occurs. Orlando, Sandy Hook, Columbine, Charleston, Baton Rouge, Sanford, those lost in the backdrop of the Neely neighborhood gunfire to which I write. We might situate our classrooms along local axes of need and teach different ways of knowing through decolonizing epistemologies and projects of the critical imagination and empathy in the imagination intellect and acts and expressions of love. We might write slow methodologies in place of mixed methodologies and pause in the midst of hate to cook up something good, something nourishing made with love, something to repair and sustain our souls. We might collectively reimagine the foundations of social research so that love might become ontology, epistemology, methodology, axiology, and pedagogy too. We might then contribute to a better world by countering the changing tides of our historical present, by teaching methodological diversity as methodological justice, and by teaching critical qualitative inquiry is as love.
Thank you, Jasmine. That's beautiful. There's so much to sit with there.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about how you came to creating this piece?
I can. There are a few reasons that this piece happened to emerge. The first one had to do with a call for papers that became a special issue in the journal Qualitative Inquiry on terrorism and hate in Orlando, poetic and performative responses. And it was guest edited by Bryant Keith Alexander and Mary Weems. And it was really a response to the shootings at Pulse Nightclub in Orlando on June 12th, 2016. And the special issue called for, again, poetic and performative responses. And after Pulse, that was something that I thought a lot about, and wanted to respond. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and I thought, well, what would I write? Because the call was open. And I think, as is the case with this particular event, but many of the events that happen around us that are tragic and sad and horrifying, I think it's easy to feel helpless and not know what to do. Mm-hmm. For me, I often write about things, knowing that, of course, writing is not enough in and of itself, but perhaps writings can spark changes here and there. So I sat with a call, I thought about writing, and I thought about the nightclub shooting in the context of other political events happening in the U.S., but also how we happen to treat each other as humans oftentimes, and thought that a lot of basically the bad things that happen in the world come down to not treating other human beings with respect and dignity and love. Mm. And so I sat with the idea of love and thought about how I happen to be positioned in the world as a teacher. I may work in a university setting now, but I still very much identify as a public elementary school teacher. And love was an important part of my teaching practice then, and it is now. So I thought about that, about how I have opportunities to contribute to the world, how that might happen through love, and how that might happen through teaching, given that I think it is the most important work that I do on a day-to-day basis. Mm. So I sat with that idea, and I thought about also how oftentimes we're called to write philosophies of teaching statements, mm-hmm. and I've written many of these in my life. But I thought, what if I could just write a philosophy of teaching that didn't necessarily have a preset formula, could just sit down and write what it was that I actually thought about teaching. And so I took the opportunity and I did that, not knowing whether it would end up in the special issue or not. Mostly I was just glad that the special issue was being put together. It was really an honor to be included, but didn't expect, for me, the important thing was that the special issue was coming together, regardless of whether that piece would be in it. So those were things that I was thinking about as I was writing this particular piece. And that's not to say, in terms of, like, teaching through love for me doesn't mean teaching people what to think or how to act or how to take up or not take up particular methodologies, but really thinking about how, as researchers, as inquirers, as teachers ourselves, we can be more compassionate and contribute better things, better energy to the world. Mm-hmm. It ended up being a really wonderful special issue last month at the International Congress of Qualitative Inquiry. It was such a pleasure, such an honor to be able to sit in on a panel and hear many of the pieces be performed out loud. Mm. And it was a very different experience hearing many of the pieces. And I'm really grateful to Bryant Keith Alexander and Mary Weems for not only putting the special issue together, but putting that particular panel together. So in the context of, again, the International Congress of Qualitative Inquiry last month, but this podcast today, it's very nice to be able to sit with this piece again. I like circling back to things to think about, mm-hmm. how writing can shift my practice over time. How the things I write give me things to think about, help make me hopefully a better teacher, a better scholar. So those are some of the things that I was really thinking about as I was writing this piece. And again, thinking about how the world can be a place that is really filled with terrible things. People acting in hateful ways, in oppressive ways, doing things that are often unnecessary to other people, and thinking, what if the little actions mattered a lot in how we go about our day to day, not just in classroom settings, but kind of if everybody just did a little and acted just a little more kindly toward everyone else, I wonder what kind of difference that would make mm-hmm. in the world. And so for me, that was something that I was thinking walking into that particular piece, but it's also something that has carried with me in almost, I suppose, now the 2 years since that event, since the call for papers, and since I began to write that.
The Qualitative Research Special Interest Group was established in 1987 to provide a space within the American Educational Research Association for the discussion of philosophical, ethical, and methodological issues in qualitative research. We invite you to consider joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group today. For members of the American Educational Research Association, the annual fee for joining the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group for regular, non-graduate student members is $10, and the annual fee for graduate students is $5. As members of the Qualitative Research Special Interest Group, you will gain access to a network of fellow qualitative scholars, as well as our many activities, ranging from mentoring opportunities to our exciting new podcast series, to updates and news related to recent qualitative publications and jobs. Please visit the American Educational Research Association's website at www.aera.net to join the Qualitative Research SIG today.
Desmond, you talked about how writing is not enough, but writing can spark change mm-hmm. here and there. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I mentioned that I identify as a teacher, and I do. I think now as an academic, I also identify as a writer. I enjoy writing. I like the medium of writing. I like to think about how words can come together to express ideas. And I think for me, I think that we're all situated in the world differently, and we bring different strengths, different talents, different things that we could potentially contribute within that. And so again, for me, kind of like I was mentioning about teaching, right? If teaching is what I'm doing, how can I do good things in the world through teaching? Well, also if writing is what I'm doing, because there is a research component to my job as well, being at a research university, mm-hmm. how can I potentially spark change through writing? And it doesn't feel like enough given the things that happen in the world. It is easy to feel very overwhelmed. And I often do, but then I return to the idea of, well, what can I do through teaching, through writing? And I do believe there have been many texts that have influenced me as a thinker, as a person, from when I was little to now. And I think that the things that we can read can change our life. And maybe that sounds very dramatic, and I don't know that, I wouldn't say that I'm changing anybody's life with how I write. But I think that there is a power in writing mm-hmm. to communicate who we are and what we believe, and to pass on other ideas that people might think with, that people might then take up differently, might take up in better ways than I had imagined. But I think that writing can produce things, writing can make things happen, writing can share good ideas that get out there. For me, I see writing as a space of hope, almost as a pedagogy of hope. Mm-hmm. I was thinking with Paulo Freire. But I think the world is such that, again, little actions make a difference. And I think it will take many people working on many different fronts in many different ways to effectuate positive change. And people will be having much greater impact than I will, but maybe I can have just a little influence through writing is what I hope.
Mm. I love those ideas. One thing that you also write about, talk about in your work, Jasmine, is this idea of doing critical qualitative research. And certainly it's common for people to say, I do critical qualitative research. But from your perspective, what does it mean to be a critical qualitative researcher?
That's a great question. And I think being a critical qualitative researcher, as you mentioned, it does mean many things to many people, which for me is part of the appeal, that I think that there is an openness and an inclusivity within that particular term that welcomes many scholars who are working against oppression and marginalization in many different areas. In the piece that I just read, Critical Qualitative Inquiry Is As Love, I thought about it in a few different contexts, particularly through the lens of different critical theories, those having to do with sexuality, with race, with gender, with ability and disability, with how people are situated geopolitically, thinking about indigenous epistemologies as well. Also thinking about plants and animals and everyone and everything in the world. How do those things come together? And that's a really big answer, I think, a really broad answer to the question of what is critical qualitative inquiry. Mm-hmm. For me, those are some of the things that potentially fall within it. Those are some of the intersectionalities that I think with when I think about critical qualitative inquiry, some of the things that are most important to me. But I think it's also a term that is constantly evolving as we grow as people and become more inclusive as scholars and do better work in the world. You had asked in the last question about writing. And I mentioned that there have been texts that have had a profound influence on my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is Critical Qualitative Inquiry by Norman Denzin, and it appeared in Qualitative Inquiry in 2017. So it's a relatively new piece as far as scholarship goes. But for me, it was an instant classic. Mm-hmm. It is a piece that I go back to again and again and again. And Norman Denzin wrote, it wrote a lot of things in this article, but the passage that I continue to come back to has to do with what critical scholars do. And so I know I just gave a definition of how I'm conceptualizing critical qualitative inquiry and critical qualitative research. And again, I'm not sure that I'm the one who has a definition or the definition. That's how I take it in my work. And I do appreciate broader conceptualizations of the term. And so that's part of why there's a particular passage in here that I really like. So I'll share it just briefly. But what Norman Denzin writes is that critical scholars are committed to showing how the practices of critical interpretive qualitative research can help change the world in positive ways, and that they are committed to creating new ways of making the practices of critical qualitative inquiry central to the workings of a free democratic society. To me, that's what he writes there. Captures so much of what I think critical qualitative inquiry, critical qualitative research is trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think ideally critical qualitative inquiry serves everyone and everything, but it's more of an approach to research, to life, to moving through the world in ways that try to make it better for, again, everyone and everything around us to the extent that we can.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea that it's an approach to life. Can you say a little bit more about that?
I think, that's a great question. For me, there aren't necessarily artificial boundaries between research and life.
Mm.
In part, that's because I really use the word inquiry. And I think inquiry is something that, for me at least, is hard to turn off. Wondering how the world works, how it could be better. Like, that's not something that, like, oh, like, 9 o'clock rolls around in the morning, like, okay, like, time to go to work, like, that part of my body turns on, and oh, 5 o'clock, done. Don't have to think about that anymore. So for me, thinking about, especially since qualitative research is very much studies people, studies social settings, studies the world around us. We're always in the world around us.
Mm.
So I think my wheels are always spinning. And I think that one of the best things about qualitative inquiry is that it's very much situated in life.
Mm.
The discipline is alive, but the other people who are doing wonderful and amazing work are really paying attention to the people and to the world around them. And I think beyond that, I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, I think about writing a lot, and then I also think about the things that I write. And I try to be true to those things,
mm-hmm.
and carry them with me in an effort to become a better person myself.
Mm-hmm.
I carry the stories of my research participants with me,
mm-hmm.
as I do work, as I move through the world, just as I do with my students. The former students that I taught in a public school setting, and the doctoral students, the graduate students that I have today, they're always with me in my mind. And so for me, all of these things come together in ways that aren't always visible when I write or when I do research or when other people do the same. But I think that we are very much embedded in the world, entangled with the world. We live and we write and we inquire and we do research in relation to the world. So I think a lot of the times those things can weave together in what end up being very wonderful ways.
Mm. There's so much to sit with there. Jasmine, I'm sure that many of our listeners would appreciate accessing your work further. What's the best way for people to learn more about your work?
Oh, thank you. Probably the best way is through my website, which is www.jasmineulmer.com. So that's JASMINEULMER. There's a lot of work and images, video posted there. So I bring multimedia into my work a lot, so that's on the website. But ResearchGate is another way to find texts as well.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Thank you. And thank you for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to learn from you.
Well, thank you. This is a wonderful opportunity. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here.
Take care, Jasmine.